The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, August 15th, 2022.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Well, I'm really honored today. Joining me in the studio is attorney and migration, immigration specialist and investigator Nancy Perm Burton, who is a member of the Committee for Law Enforcement Accountability, and also the CLEAN Committee, C-L-E-A-N, and also part of the Community Advisory Council of Independent Office of Law Enforcement Review and Outreach. We call it ALERO here in Sonoma County. And since we are celebrating the 102nd anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, which opened the door to many, many opportunities, for this segment, where this is part two, actually, I interviewed Nancy about 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, the end of July, and we were talking about IOLERO and the CLEAN Committee and all the different amendments that have been made and some of the agreements that have been made. And unfortunately, we ran out of time, so I'm going to bring her back for part two to further discuss the IOLERO program, also to talk about the new executive director that they have. But also, she's a lawyer, you know, and here we are celebrating 102 years since we got the vote, and here's a very outstanding woman lawyer. I thought she could share with us some of her challenges and some of the inspirations she got into working in the area of law, and hopefully she can inspire some young women out there who might be considering becoming a lawyer. I mean, it's quite a challenge, but it can be done. And you know, when you think about it, there's two things we're going to be talking about. You know, one time women couldn't even get a credit card; they could not even sign a contract to own their own home. And here now we have women in the profession such as law. I mean, at one time, you couldn't even get into law school. And even after you got into law school and you graduated, you know, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, when she first went to work, all they wanted to do was make her a clerk, you know, and not allow her to do her full, you know, her full education, like what she learned and how she learned to be a good lawyer. And it was a real challenge for her. And it's still a challenge for women. But I thought it would be an interesting discussion. And also, Ken and I were, as we were driving over to the studio this morning, you know, one of the things he said, what we're talking about with IOLERO is a very important concept, a very important idea, and it's called oversight. You know, that we want to have oversight and accountability for our law enforcement. So what we're going to talk about today could be happening in any community. And there are many, many communities struggling to have oversight. In fact, I remember when we first went, during the Andy Lopez situation, you know, the young boy who, 13-year-old boy that was shot, he would be like 22 years old now. He was only 13 at the time it happened. But at that time, the community really became aware that there was no accountability and no oversight, and I could not believe that it was three Board of Supervisors meetings where they debated over the word oversight. I mean, come on, oversight? Like, we have to have a struggle for it when it should be just something automatically done. In fact, the police, the law enforcement themselves should insist upon oversight because they are answerable to not each other, they're answerable to the community. You know, and just a small reminder, you know, I mean, I'm a homeowner. I pay taxes. I pay property taxes, and part of those property taxes go to fund police. And so I have an expectation that they're going to take care of me, they're going to honor me, and they're going to welcome oversight, they're going to welcome accountability. So that's a lot to think about. Well, I have a few announcements, and the first thing I want to do is I have to say that Ken and I went to the Raise Your Roof event in Monte Rio, and it was absolutely wonderful. In fact, our president, Alicia Sanchez, and her husband, we have wonderful, wonderful video of them dancing. I mean, the bands were just outstanding. So I want to do a real shout-out to Shekinah Black, who is the executive director of the Peace and Justice Center. She just did an excellent, excellent job. The downside of it was there should have been 1,000 people there, but there weren't. But there were enough to have a good time, and the bands were just amazing. And most of them, although, you know, Shekinah's a very interesting woman, she believes that you pay your musicians. But I know that they made a lot of consideration and a special arrangement with her as far as pricing goes. So I want to do a shout out to the bands that were there. One of them that was the last band that played was called Mobo Tombos from San Francisco. And they actually played with bands such as Santana, and they were just fantastic. Midnight Sun, one of my favorites, was just amazing. And my favorite group, I have to say, and Ken and I said that we both agreed, is called The Thugs. They were it's called Tribal Hippie Underground Zone. That's how they identified themselves. And then the Our Band. Oh, my God. Ben Roots and DJ Louisiana. Just amazing, amazing bands. And I want to do a shout-out for them and to thank them for supporting this wonderful, wonderful project here in Sonoma County. And also, you know, they have not reached their goal. You know, their goal is $20,000 to put a brand-new roof on. And we know how difficult it is to do fundraising. But I just thought I would mention this. If you do want to make a donation, I'm sure they would welcome it. And let me give you Shekinah's email. It's shekeyna@gmail.com. So you can email her, and she will let you know how to make a donation. Actually, it will go directly to the center now. For a while, they were working with Evan Bright, but they're not working for Evan Bright anymore. So, you know, make a donation. You know, this is our community, you know, and it's very important. I mean, we are so fortunate to have a Peace and Justice Center here. Not every community has one. And not only is it here, but they are always involved in so many, many things. So I really encourage you to support them. And here's another announcement. Mark your calendars. To honor the celebration of 102 years since we got the vote, the National Organization for Women, now, which I'm the treasurer. If you remember, I was the president. Now I'm the treasurer. I can't believe I'm the treasurer. It's kind of a joke to me and also to Ken. Anyway, the Sonoma County chapter will be having their monthly Zoom meeting on August 15th, that's tonight, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., and we are going to have a special guest. And that's Molly Murphy McGregor, one of the co-founders of the National Women's History Project, now known as the National Women's History Alliance. So go to now, N-O-W, capital letters, Sonoma, S-O-N-O-M-A.org, for all the details, you know, the codes and everything that you get into Zoom. And I want to make another announcement that Molly Murphy McGregor will also be a guest on Women's Spaces on the August 22nd show. And we will be talking about women in history, and also I'm going to get some of her opinions on what's going on with what's happening with Roe versus Wade and some of the other issues around women and politics. I mean, there's so many things going on. I don't know. You know, we are the ones who bring forth life. We bring forth children. You'd think we would get a little bit more respect than we get. I mean, it's just, I don't understand it. You know, I scratch my head every day and say, hey, wait a minute. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me is that being a great-grandmother, you know, as a great-grandmother, I think to myself, God, four generations, my blood is flowing through them. You know, how can I be silent? How can I not stand up for what's right? I mean, how can I not speak out? You know, our children are the future, and we must never, never, never lose sight of that. If we don't have the basics for them, by the time they grow up, they're angry and hostile, and there's a lot of issues that we don't want to have to deal with. So it's really, really important that we understand that. Well, I have a final announcement here. I think it's a final announcement. Let me see. Yes, that's the final announcement. There's going to be a dedication ceremony, and I have to say that It's amazing. It's the National Collaboration of Women's Historic Sites, and they are inviting you to a dedication ceremony honoring recognized site where suffrage events took place, known as Hussein's Hall in 1896. So well, on August 19th, that's coming up, there's going to be a reception in Sebastopol, and it's going to be at 196 North Main Street. That's where they have their suffrage paraphernalia there, and it's a wonderful, wonderful museum. And I really encourage people to attend. And a reminder, everything that we talk about online here is all on www.womenspaces.com. So it's very important. And this is a dedication ceremony that they've worked very hard in their historic society in Sebastopol. And I really encourage people to go out and to see what's going on and to congratulate them for getting this wonderful, wonderful award. Right here in Sonoma County, you know, we do a lot of things, a lot of women's issues here in this county, particularly since the National Women's History Alliance was actually founded here. And I remember myself, just a little bit of trivia, I went to school with Molly McGregor. We were in the same class at Sonoma State, and I remember we were walking to class one day, and Molly is a beautiful woman. I mean, she, just being with her, her spirit and her energy is so positive. And we're walking, and we're just chatting, going to things, and she says, you know, Elaine, J.J. Wilson, she's working on a thing on women in art. And I looked at her. I says, oh, are there women artists? I mean, this was 1973. We had no idea that there were women artists and all kinds of contributions that women made. And thank you so much to Molly McGregor and her group for doing such a wonderful thing. And, you know, just talking about women, you know, our history is our strength. It is so important. And why do I say that? Every Monday I say the same thing. We're going to do this segment, Our History is Our Strength. Why? Because our history tells us what we could do, what we couldn't do, the mistakes we made, how to make things better. All kinds of things evolve out of your history. If you don't understand your history, we keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know I talk to young women. You know, even I talked to one of the top reporters at the Press Democrat who did not, that's our local paper, who did not even know that the National Women's History Alliance, before that was known as the National Women's History Project, was founded right here in Sonoma County. And I don't know if folks notice, but when I do Our History is Our Strength, I try to blend. You know, I record live here on KBBF, and it's a bilingual station. And so what I try to do is I try to introduce as many women from as many different cultures as possible. So usually in the presentation when I do the Our History is Our Strength, I'll have a Hispanic woman, an African-American woman, hopefully a very hard to find Asian women. And it's very interesting. In fact, if anybody knows of any history of Sonoma County around Asian women, please email me at elaineholtz@gmail.com and let me know some of the history that maybe that I'm missing in our county. And also, we are reaching out to many, many other counties. So any woman listening out there, if there's any woman that you know of that you feel should be mentioned on the air or given some attention, please do not hesitate to email me. So let's go on my favorite segment, Our History is Our State. In the scheme of things, why is this important? I'm going to make this statement. Women have struggled, and through these struggles have accomplished many positive things for all of us. Remember, if we did not have the vote, we would not have a voice in the decision-making process. And what's so heartbreaking to me was I don't see 100% of women who are registering voting. And it's very important. You know, we're going to have an election coming up in November. And, you know, it's very, very important. This is actually an election that's going to make a lot of changes in our country. And you have to ask yourself, which way do we want to go? But if you don't answer that question for yourself and you don't go to the polls and vote for what you want, well, then you have no right to complain. In fact, when people start complaining to me, the first thing I ask them is, did you vote? And if they didn't vote, I really don't want to hear it. Because that's the minimum thing we can do in this country is to vote. That's how the first step to allowing our voice to be heard. Well, let's go ahead and let's talk about this. And it's very interesting. When I looked through all the different things, I found very few women that I could praise for events or something that happened. But there's many, many birthdays. So I thought I would go through these birthdays rather quickly. We have August 15th. She was born August 15th, 1913, and she made her transition in 1998. Aurora Castillo, community activist, and I love this because I was born in East Los Angeles, co-founded Mothers of East Los Angeles in 1984, which worked against a proposed prison and hazardous waste dump in East Los Angeles. Amazing. Well, happy birthday, Aurora. You know, like I said, she made her transition in 1998. But that's where I was born. I was born in East LA. And I know oftentimes there are things happening there that get very, very little attention. Well, here's another birthday, August 17th, 1927, and she made her transition in 1997. And I love it. Elaine Hedges, another Elaine. And by the way, Elaine means light. So Elaine Hedges, educator, helped create the field of women's studies. She was a founding member of the National Women's Studies Association, founded the Women's Studies Program at Towson University, one of the oldest programs in the country. She was a writer and editor of the Feminist Press. And, you know, it's so interesting when I think an Elaine had so much to do with women's studies. And I remember when I landed in Sonoma County and went to Sonoma State in 1973, and there was women's studies. And I'll tell you something, it was the most exciting time in my life, and I never knew how ignorant I was about my own gender until I took all those classes. You know, a shout out, by the way, to my dear teacher, Ann Neal. If you're listening, Ann, I want to send you lots of love for what you did for us and so many, many other women. Well, here's another woman that was born August 18th. I mean, just think of what these women have done. And think of what we are talking about in the studio today, what other women are trying to do right here in our counties, all across the United States, trying to bring accountability to and oversight with our law enforcement. Amazing. Well, here this woman on August 18th, 1911 was when she was born, and she just made her transition in 2015. Well, I wish I would have known that to be able to get a hold of her and maybe do an interview. Her name is Amelia Boynton Robinson. She was an activist who was the leader of the American Civil Rights Movement in Selma, Alabama. Imagine what that woman went through. And a key figure in the 1965 Selma, Alabama marches. One of the most brutal marches in American history for African-American people. So happy birthday, Amelia. That is just amazing. And now here we come to one of my favorite women. And, you know, I've just been watching Mrs. America, and then I'm also watching a program about Shirley Chisholm. And the reason I mention those two women is because the birthday we're talking about, August 18th, 1927, and she's still around. Rosalind Carter, U.S. First Lady from 1977 to 1981, politically active while the White House focused on mental health, senior citizens, and community volunteerism. She's the co-founder of the Carter Center with her husband in 1982. And what's so special about Rosalind Carter was when the women's movement started moving, and there was a great, great convention that was called to look at writing a, like the principles of what they believed in and what they were working for. Rosalind Carter and Jimmy Carter were very, very involved. In fact, it was Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, who actually gave the women their first commission, and Bella Asbird was the leader, and that's when they start doing all the different things, and that's how they started the Women's Studies Department. And, of course, Betty Friedan with her book, The Feminine Mystique, all those things were happening, and Rosalind Carter was very, very much involved and very supportive. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot of birthdays to acknowledge. And think about these women. Think about what they were involved with, especially when you think about this woman. Let me go back and look at her name. Amelia Boynton Robinson. You know, African-American woman involved with the Selma marches. Can you imagine? I mean, I can't imagine what it must have been like when all of a sudden they've decided to do that march, and all of a sudden they're confronted with all this law enforcement with their guns and their horses, and they kept marching even though they were beaten to a pulp. I mean, it's mind-boggling what people have to go through to get freedoms. And, you know, once you get a freedom, after you've done all that work, it's such a celebration. But I just want to give you a little bit of information. Once you lose a freedom that you've gained, it's almost impossible to get it back. It becomes twice as difficult. It reminds me of when I stopped smoking. The first time was easy. You know, the second time was easy. But the third time, oh, my God, I thought I'd never make it. So we have to recognize that we have made many, many leaps in the past several decades. And we have to hold on to them because little by little they're being taken away. I don't know. I guess there's a new buzzword. I think it's Christian nationalism. I mean, I'm starting to ring in my head, and I'm starting to think, what is all this about? What is going on in the world? It was very interesting. Well, we're going to take a musical break now. I love musical breaks. You know, and it's interesting, you know, listen to the songs. I try to pick songs that are in tune with what we are talking about. And this is one of my favorite. It's called Ella's Song. You know, we who believe in freedom will not stop. And it's sung by Emily Ebert. And the reason I chose her is because I feel she's the one that's the easiest one to understand. But there's another group, Sweet Honey and the Rock, that I play every once in a while. They were the ones who brought Ella's Song forward. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's listen to Ella's Song by Emily Ebert. And when we return, joining me in the studio is attorney, migration specialist, and investigator Nancy Permburton, who is a member of the Committee of Law Enforcement Accountability Now, which they go on. I love that. Clean. Let's clean it up. You know, let's get it going. And the community, she's also a member of the Community Advisory Council of the Independent Office of Law Enforcement Review and Outreach, which we call IALERO. And I had her on February, and we were talking about IALERO, but ran out of time. And she is here to continue the conversation about this organization, but also she's going to talk about some of her own personal experiences being a lawyer here in Sonoma County. So go ahead, Ken. Let's go ahead and play Ella's Song, sung by Emily Ebert.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until as important as the killing of a white man, white mother's sons. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. The older I get, the better I secret of my going on is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm. To me, young people come first. They have the courage where we fail. And if I can shed some light as they carry us through the gale. Myself don't mean a whole lot. I come to realize the teaching of us to stand up and fight, the only way my struggle survives. I'm a woman who speaks in a voice, and I must be heard. At times I can be quite difficult. I bow to no man's word. We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
then freedom will not rest. I mean, you can sleep once in a while, but no resting. Well, for you just joining in, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my special guest. Joining me in the studio is attorney Nancy Pemberton. Welcome. Welcome to Women's Spaces, Nancy.
Thank you very much, Elaine. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, you know, this is our second interview. I mean, I'm turning you into a radio star. I mean, I can't help myself. You know, you do just such a great job. Well, before we start, I'd like to tell my listeners just a little bit about you. You have a wonderful resume. Nancy Pemberton is a member of the Committee for Law Enforcement Accountability, now called CLEAN, and the Community Advisory Council of Independent Office of Law Enforcement Review and Outreach, IALERO. She is committed to ensuring vigorous civilian oversight of law enforcement in Sonoma County. As an attorney, a migration specialist, and investigator, Pemberton conducted capital and non-capital investigations at the trial and post-trial stages of litigation throughout the United States and international. Wow, internationally. That's amazing, Nancy, until she retired in 2014. I mean, she retired from her law firm, but not from her activities. Pemberton co-founded and serves on the board of the Institute for International Criminal Investigations, an international NGO that trains professionals in the art and science of investigating war crimes, crimes against humanity, and acts of genocide. She is also volunteers with the Sonoma chapter of the ACLU Northern California, the Center for Justice and Accountability, and the Akinade Foundation. What's the Akinade Foundation?
They're a grant-making foundation in Oakland, and they give grants to organizations to fight systemic racism.
Oh, amazing. Well, welcome, Nancy. Once again, is there anything you'd like to add or anything you'd like us to know?
I'm just going to correct you. It's a mitigation specialist, not migration.
Mitigation.
I have nothing to do with migration.
Mitigation. Well, you know something, I have a reputation for pronouncing names wrong, and I'm really trying to overcome it. I work very hard, but sometimes I just slip, and I apologize for that.
Well, I seem to be members of organizations with very long names.
Anyway, let's talk. Let's start. I want to just remind my listeners, on August 26th, we will be celebrating the 102nd anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, which opened new opportunities in many areas, and one of them was law. Although I did find out that there were actually women lawyers all the way back in the 1700s, but there was a different kind of thing. They didn't have to deal with schools. Most of them were very self-learned, so it's very, very interesting. And, you know, a bit of trivia, though, there have been women participating in law. It was a rare event to find one. However, in the 1970s, which was the second wave of the women's movement, created a vast area of opportunities now, and the century is gaining more and more women in law. As we see more women in law, not only that, more women in the media. So women have really advanced. So let's start, Nancy. Talk about, what was your motivation to become a lawyer? And although the door was open for you, because we talked about that when you were in law school, it wasn't you were the only woman, like what Ruth Bader Ginsburg announced. You were kind of 50-50. But there were still challenges. So what motivated you, and what were some of the challenges that you had to face at that time?
Well, I think that the motivation goes back to being a child of the 1960s when certain listeners of yours who are of a particular age will remember a law show called The Defenders, E.G. Marshall and Robert Reed. And they were a father and son law partnership, and they did criminal defense work. And in the mid-60s was a time of great change in the area of criminal justice. The Supreme Court was addressing issues having to do with the Fourth Amendment search and seizure, Fifth Amendment right against incrimination, and the Sixth Amendment right to counsel. And my father and I used to watch that show together, and it was intelligent, it was nuanced, and that's why it was short-lived, but it captivated me, and I wanted to become a lawyer ever since I saw that show, and I finally did become a lawyer, but it was a long and winding journey to get there.
Well, when you talk about winding journey, what was part of that winding journey?
Oh, I dropped out of high school when I was 16, and it took me quite a while to get back to college, which I did at the age of 26, and then I finally entered law school in my 30s.
Well, you know, that's a very important point to make. You know, I went back to school when I was 30.
Right.
And I got my master's degree at 36. You know, I was, and you know, I was the same way. You know, I didn't drop. My mother would kill me. I had to graduate high school, but I definitely ran away from home several times. You know, I can tell that we were that kind of woman at that time. So that's amazing. And people have to understand that, especially if you have young children, young kids that are not quite, oh, I don't know what I want to do. Or no, give them a break. You know, we all mature, and one day we turn around and say, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it. Congratulations.
I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, we try to put these kids in boxes. Like, you're at this age, you got to do this, you got to do that. Not everybody can do it that way.
Absolutely.
And when I went back to school, I mean, when I went back to school, and I'm sure you could say the same thing, my grades, I was top of the class.
Yes.
I never thought I was so smart, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah. Well, what area of law did you choose, and what was important about that area to you?
So I chose criminal defense, just like E.G. Marshall and Robert Reed.
That's great.
And I chose it because I thought, and I still think, that it's the area of law in which the government exercises its maximum power. It is able to take your freedom away, and it is even able to take your life away with the death penalty. And many other areas of law affect people, or more people, I think. Probably housing, law, employment, family, health care. But it is really criminal law where the government can exercise its real power over the individual. And I wanted to be part of challenging that power and making sure that that power, or trying to make sure that that power, was used appropriately and fairly. And that's what I'm still trying to do with my work with IOLERO, with the CAC, and with CLEAN.
Well, you know, we're certainly getting an earful about laws right now with, the, you know, breaking the laws with the ex-president, some of the things that's going on. Now we're beginning to look at how important laws are. You know, I actually believe myself personally, we only need one law. Do unto others as you have them do unto you. If we could just live that way, we wouldn't need all these volumes and volumes and volumes of books trying to define how we can just learn to live with one another and do the right thing. You know, what was, is there any particular, like, client that was most challenging, and where did you get your self-confidence? I mean, now that I hear what you say, that you dropped out of school at 16 and then all of a sudden you're going to law school, I mean, you're going through the steps, you have to, of course, go to your, you know, get your AA and move up. I mean, where did you get your confidence, and how did you overcome maybe the feelings you had because of the fact that you decided at that time at 16 to what you did?
Well, I'm not sure that I did totally overcome those feelings. I think I still struggle sometimes with self-confidence.
But don't we all?
Some of it is, you know, fake it until you make it. So we do that. But I think that two things. One is to find something that you're passionate about. That is probably truly the most important. If you know, the practice of law is not easy. It's become much more diverse, as you mentioned, beginning in the 70s. But it still is a profession that was started by and maintained by white men of privilege. And it is hard to not be a white man of privilege in the law. So find your passion so that what you're doing every day gives meaning to you, that you're satisfied with it. And just as importantly, find your allies. Find the people who will coach you, who will be your cheerleaders, who will be your advisors, so that, and will be the shoulders that you can cry on when things go wrong. Because without those two things, without a passion and without without those allies, it's just very difficult. And it's probably true for any profession, not just the law, but I think particularly the law, which is so, in so many ways, so rigid.
Right, and so finite, you know. You got to really understand, you know, which I admire. I admire in its humanity. Well, you answered my question about if there's a woman out there, but I am curious before we take another musical break, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about Alero and some of the stuff that's going on here in our county. And by the way, even though we're talking about Sonoma County, this could be happening in any county across the United. In fact, it's happening in a lot of counties.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any one particular legal woman that stuck out that was your inspiration or that you followed or that you liked?
Well, you know, you mentioned Shirley Chisholm. She was certainly an inspiration when she ran for president all those years ago. I can't remember what year it was. You probably...
It was in the 70s.
It wasn't...
72.
It was just... that's right, because it was when McGovern ran as a Democrat. But so Shirley Chisholm is one. Rose Byrd here in California was certainly an idol. She was a public defender in Santa Clara County way before there were women's, you know, before women were common in public defender offices. She made enormous strides in her role as the head of the Agricultural Labor Relations Board. And she was really a stellar justice on the California Supreme Court. And she put up with a lot of attacks on her, attacks that were mostly unfair, that although people claimed that, or although they used her opposition to the death penalty as the reason to vote her out of office, the actual motivation for getting rid of her was her pro-labor, was perceived
as
anti-business view.
She wanted to do the right thing.
Always tried to do the right thing.
Well, thank you, Nancy, for sharing that. That is really wonderful. I mean, it really inspires me, you know, when you start thinking about it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to look up Rose Byrd. I'll put a little blurb on we'll give her a little bit of a shout out, you know, of appreciation. I don't think she's still alive.
No, she passed
away. So, you know, I mean, the ancestors, they know when we pay attention to them. Well, we're going to take a musical break right now, and we're going to play another one of my favorite songs. This really kicks me when I play this song. It's called Everybody Knows, and it's written by Leonard Cohen, but of course, you know, we are a women's show, and so I'm going to play it by Holly Figueroa. And just listen to the words. And Ken, let's just play half of this. We're not going to play the whole thing. And so let's go ahead and listen to this. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Nancy Pym Burton, and we will be talking about IALERO, Measure P, and the Community Advisory Committee, the CAC, and its power, challenges, and its new director.
Dice are loaded. Everybody rolls at the fingers crossed. Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows that the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like the father or the dog just died. Everybody talking to the pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really. Everybody knows you've been discreet. So many people you just had to meet without your clothes. Never.
Yes, everybody knows, you know. I mean, everybody thinks they're hiding things, but they're not. And especially today with the media. My God, right now with this whole thing that's happening with our former president, I mean, I get so many interpretations. My head starts to spin. I think, God, what is true anymore? You know, you don't even know. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And I'm continuing my conversation with attorney Nancy Pemberton. We're talking about all the things around IOLERO and Measure P and the Community Advisory Board that's involved with that. So this is our second conversation, Nancy, and I think it's really important right now. You know, during our previous interview, we talked about IOLERO, Measure P, and the Clean Committee and your involvement. And just give us a quick overview, you know, just a quick one before we go into it, so people remind people what these organizations are about and what they mean.
So IOLERO, as you mentioned, arose out of the tragic killing of Andy Lopez, who was 13 when he was killed by Sheriff's Deputy Eric Gelhaus. And the community outcry led to the Board of Supervisors finally a few years later to set up IOLERO as an watchdog agency providing civilian oversight of the Sheriff's Department. But IOLERO, although a good start, was plagued with two problems. One was a lack of not enough authority, and the other was a lack of resources. Measure P, which was passed by the voters by 65% of Sonoma County
65%
voters in November 2020, tried to remedy both of those problems. It gives IOLERO more independent authority, and it guarantees IOLERO a budget equal to 1% of the Sheriff's Department budget. CLEAN, the Committee for Law Enforcement Accountability Now, is a political action committee that came out of Measure P. The people who drafted and promoted Measure P, got it on the ballot, got it passed, are now part of a group, a political action committee. And what we do is we're trying to ensure that Measure P is implemented vigorously and to try and support other civilian oversight of local law enforcement, such as the city police departments. So that's it, I think, in a nutshell.
And then you're also a member of the CAC.
Oh, yes, and the Community Advisory Council was set up as part of IOLERO. It's a group now of 11 people who are appointed by the various supervisors, and one person is appointed by the IOLERO Executive Director. And we provide advice to IOLERO. We look at policies and suggest policy changes to the Sheriff's Department, and we try to act as the go-between the community and the sheriff and really promote transparency and accountability throughout the county.
It's an amazing group. I've watched several meetings, and I have to give you a shout-out for some of the issues that you brought up, and you just recently had a letter to the editor, which was absolutely excellent, explaining about this recent shooting that's happened here in our county. Well, let's start with right now. They just hired a new executive director. His name is
John Alden.
Oh, Alden.
That's a Puritan.
we have a friend who's an Alden, who's actually from the Alden family that came over. Okay. Talk a little bit about him. What are your thoughts? Do you feel he's a good fit? Did you have some input in it? Give us a little information.
Yes, I was on there were two panels that the Office of Human Resources put together to help screen candidates for this position. And I was on the panel that was called the Community Panel. It was people from a variety of different nonprofit organizations and the CAC. There were two members from the CAC. And John was one of the finalists who we recommended to the Board of Supervisors, and I'm delighted that he was offered the job, and I'm delighted that he accepted. He's just a terrific attorney. He began his career here in Sonoma County as a deputy district attorney, and he's worked in the field of civilian oversight of law enforcement directly for the last 13 years, both in San Francisco and in Oakland. And even before that, he was a an attorney for the Internal Affairs Division of the San Francisco Police Department. So he has a long, long history of oversight of police conduct, and I think he will bring that a great deal of experience to this job that will be incredibly helpful as we navigate through some new issues facing this county around civilian oversight.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that makes me feel good, that you're excited about it. I mean, we've had so many disappointments. I mean, it's been such a long journey. I mean, I remember when it was three meetings that they debated the word oversight. You know, I couldn't believe that. I mean, it blew my mind, to be honest. Well, yeah,
I think that John will do a terrific job, and he is very deserving of the community support.
Well, good. I'm. You don't know how happy I am to hear that. And you know, I want to do a special shout out when you talk about the committees. I want to do a shout out to Jim Duffy. You know, he's been so instrumental. You know, Jim, if you're listening, every once in a while there is a wonderful man that comes along that does some great things. So we thank you for your commitment, and also to my dear friend Susan Lamont, who's been on this for just a long time. And I just feel there's just a feeling I have that maybe because we have a director like this that's been involved in the community and understand what's going on here, that maybe we can really start moving forward. Well, let's bring the folks up to date. The County Deputies Association have come to an agreement, and that's what we talked about last time, that there was a lot of controversy around it, a lot of expression about it. I was at several meetings myself, and I was actually very surprised at some of the things that I heard. So talk about that. Talk about how that has kind of stopped some of the progress that Iolero could have made, and where it stands now at this point.
Okay. Well, let me just start with a caveat that lawyers disagree, and that's why we have lawyers, because we can read language differently. If we all read all of the language the same, we wouldn't need lawyers to help us interpret it. The memorandum, well, the letters of agreement, which also some people will call memorandum of understanding, are between the county and the two deputies associations. And what they do is outline procedures for how Measure P will be implemented. And under state law, generally, laws that are passed by the voters, measures that are passed by the voters, not by a legislative body, but by the voters, can only be amended by the voters. They would have, if you want to make an amendment, you would have to go back and put another measure on the ballot and let the voters vote on that.
Oh.
So that's generally the rule. The case law, though, says that you can make amendments if they are not what they were. The word that they use is substantive. That is, if they don't make changes to the intent or the letter of the measure. So the question here is some of the provisions in the memoranda of understanding or in these letters of agreement, are they substantive amendments to Measure P? The county lawyer and the Board of Supervisors and apparently the Deputies Association of Lawyers all think that they are not substantive. I think that some other people, including myself and members of the community, are concerned that they are substantive amendments. And there are three areas in particular that we're concerned about. And the first has really been brought home, unfortunately, by the July 29th killing of David Peláez Chávez, who was a farm worker and was shot and killed by a sheriff's deputy on July 29th. And that provision in the Memorandum of Understanding has to do with Iolero's authority to conduct independent investigations of the use of deadly force.
Outside of the sheriff or the police, because in the past, I know it's been the police department that evaluates the sheriff's department.
Right. And that's still the case, and that would not change. Iolero didn't change anything about that. What it did was to add a layer of independent investigation. So right now, where there's a use of deadly force, the way it works is that the sheriff's department refers that incident to an outside agency, in this case, the Santa Rosa Police Department. The Santa Rosa Police Department and the DA conduct investigations into whether there were any criminal violations of law by the sheriff's deputies in committing the killing. Once that those investigations are completed, the sheriff then does its own, the sheriff's department does its own investigation, and they're investigating whether there were violations of sheriff's policies, not criminal law, but sheriff's policies and procedures. Under Measure P, the intent was that very shortly after a use of deadly force, IOLERA would come in and do an independent investigation. And
even while they're doing the independent investigation, they're still allowing the sheriff and the police department. So it's like two levels that are looking at the same thing.
Right. And IOLERA is prohibited by law from interfering with the sheriff's work, or in this case also the DA and the Santa Rosa Police Department. But they can conduct an investigation without interfering. They can conduct an independent investigation without interfering. The the letters of agreement, however, put off the timing of when IOLERA can conduct its own investigation.
Now, that part that you're talking about, that they decided to put off the time, in other words, you're saying, is that when it should have come to the voters to be reevaluated?
That is my position. My position is that is a substantive amendment to Measure P and should not be permitted to go into effect without a vote of the voters. But as I said, the county doesn't agree with that.
Well, like you said, lawyers disagree with one another, and you're dealing with county council here, and most communities have a county councilor, and then you have a team of lawyers, and it's a little bit difficult sometimes to get them to see your point.
Yes, and we are trying to let them see our point. The second area is whistleblower complaints. So Measure P said that authorized IOLERA to be both a receiving agency of whistleblower complaints, that is, bring the information in, accept the complaint from a whistleblower.
So I would go to you. I would go to IOLERA first.
Yes. Well, you can choose whoever you want to go to, but IOLERA is authorized to take
The complaint.
Right.
Okay.
And Measure P, importantly, also authorized IOLERA to independently investigate that complaint. The Memorandum of Understanding had no procedures about how IOLERA should investigate whistleblower complaints, and they require the executive director to determine whether to turn that complaint over to what they call the appropriate enforcement agency. Well, in most cases of a whistleblower complaint from a sheriff's employee, it's going to be the sheriff that is the appropriate enforcing agency.
Oh.
So what the Memorandum of Understanding essentially say is IOLERA should take in the complaint, hear what the facts of it, gather the documents from the complainant, gather the names of the witnesses from the complainant, and then turn that over to the sheriff's department. That just doesn't make any sense. And we think that's a substantive amendment to the Measure P.
But also, I'm thinking, if I may, let's take it away from the sheriff's department. I'm working in a company, and I have a complaint against my supervisor. And then the complaint goes back to the supervisor?
Essentially,
I mean, that's going to create a lot of misery for me, and I won't even trust to complain then.
I think that's exactly right. And so it's very problematic, and it's unclear to me both why the county would agree to that, but also why the deputies' associations want that, because...
Well, they want to know.
Well, you would think that they would want to protect their deputies who are whistleblowers, but apparently not.
I mean, that is stunning to me. I didn't realize that was the way it was. So what are you doing to try to overcome that or to stop that or to get another initiative on the ballot and let us vote on it? Oh, my God, we're running out of time again.
Well, let me just say a couple of things. One is that the letters of agreement can be renegotiated, and we have asked, the CAC has asked, and CLEAN has asked, that the Board of Supervisors reopen those negotiations and try and resolve these problems. Secondly, So I think that the community ought to be asking their supervisors to do the same thing, that we should not let up that pressure. We should continue to ask for those changes to be made to the letters of agreement.
You know, you might give me a statement to put on the website, what kind of wording they would have, you know, how they would ask that question.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Well, you know, we're coming to the end of our interview again, and time goes by so fast here, and you're just so wonderful, such clear information, Nancy. I we're going to have you on again as we keep continue looking at this. So give us your website and how they can get a hold of you, and maybe that you can help make suggestions if folks want to write their supervisors or want to take any action.
Okay, let me this is the website or the Facebook page for CLEAN. It's www.facebook.com/cleancommittee. And then you can email us at cleancommittee@gmail.com.
And all that will be on Women Spaces.
Okay.
Everything will be on the website. And how about you? Is there any email that you have that they can get a hold of you?
They should email me in care of the CLEAN.
In care of the CLEAN.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you, Nancy Pemberton. This was a wonderful, wonderful interview. Thank you for being on the second time. And I want to thank my listeners out there for listening. And please go to www.womenspaces.com. I'm going to have a statement from Nancy. We can have some wording. And I think it's very important that we get involved. You know, it's very important. This is our community, and we want to make sure that we have oversight. Oversight is good for all of us. You know, what happens to one of us can happen to any one of us. And we have to make sure that we have all those protections. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I want to remind you one more time, our children are our future, and we must never lose sight of that. You know, we invest in our future through our children. What we give to them and what we teach them is how we assure our future. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, August 15th, 2022.